This club's about winning trophies. I'm inexperienced in a lot of those things.
Sorry for smiling there.
Almost lost the cup and you win it. The new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. That's the winner.
Welcome to the American Red Devils podcast. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And we're bringing you the best Manchester United news from this side of the pond.
Woo, sir. How you doing? How you doing? It is good to be back from international break. Manchester United, of course, we had a window. January transfer window comes to a shut. More news outside of the window dealings as it relates to Manchester United, and it's not good news. Star boy Mason Greenwood caught up in all kinds of bad controversy, sir. But either way, football's coming back on Friday. Good distraction from all the negativity that's been surrounding the club recently. And I'm just looking forward to, seeing the boys back in action. How are we doing?
Sir, couldn't be more excited for Manchester United football to be back. We got Middlesbrough on Friday. Shout out to the U.S. men's national team. They just beat Honduras 3-0, sir. Although we did get slapped around by the Canucks. Pretty bad. I know there's a lot of listeners from Canada. You got us this time. We'll see how far you guys go in the World Cup. So, I did get a lot of tweets from the American Red Devils Canadian fan base. And look, you got us. That's all I got to say. But still, Manchester United, that's what this podcast is really about. That's what we really care about, sir. And I'm very excited to come back. Great win against West Ham, if you remember. And we're going to be doing Middlesbrough dirty. Rangnick's Red Army is going to be in full effect.
Full effect and into the cup competition that, means quite a bit to this Manchester United side, sir. They should be competing in the FA Cup. We got a nice draw against the Middlesbrough side. It's favorable compared to some of the teams that are still left in the pot. And a good chance for us to start February, tight fixture list, with a win at home, because they're going to come thick and fast. We talked about it on the Patreon pod, just wrapping it up. A couple of minutes ago, shout out, join Patreon, that it's going to be very important to start off this run of fixtures in February with a win, big win against Middlesbrough, and then kick on, because there's some winnable matches, but we got some tricky fixtures in there. The Burnleys, the Brightons, the Palaces of the world, winnable 3 points, but they won't come easy. They never do in the Premier League.
Sir, the last 2 weeks could be summed up in our infamous phrase here on the podcast. We are thirsty for signings. We are hungry for trophies, sir. We did get no signings. We're dying for midfielders at Manchester United. Oh, by the way, the board shipping midfielders out of Manchester United, trying to save that cheddar. All these loan moves. Tony Martial, totally could use him. He looked great against West Ham. Why would we want to get rid of him? Donny van de Beek, we're dying for midfielders. Why would we get rid of get the wages off the books. Save the Glazers some money, sir. That is what it's all about at Manchester United. We haven't won a trophy since 2017. We've been doing this podcast almost 5 years.
Don't remind me.
5 years. We have not won a trophy. I don't know if we're the Great Jinx podcast, but I don't know what I would do. This FA Cup represents a winnable trophy for Manchester United. We have lacked that killer instinct, if you recall.
If you recall. Gdansk?
There's some penalties in Gdansk, wherever that is. I don't even remember anymore. I was trying to forget about it. We've lacked that edge. FA Cup last year, we got bounced by Leicester, if you recall, and they went on to win it. I thought that was a very winnable moment. So Middlesbrough, it's not quite a big game. I think we're going to dust them easy, but a big cup competition. And this is how this team should be thinking, like the locker room, this interim manager. Be like, let's win something. This is something we can win, and have the team really rally around it. That's what we need at the moment. Screw top four, sir. I want silverware.
We want silverware, and you know what? The narrative around Manchester United was positive headed into the international break. It is certainly negative heading out of the international break, given the window and the Mason news. But we're excited for football. This is a cup competition that we could be winning. And like I said, I do think it's important to start with some good momentum as we head into these matches and a winnable game, right? Big one. We could be playing tougher opponents than Middlesbrough. So I think win is infectious. Same way that like a Europa League final win would have propelled this team to, I think, a little bit better of a start. Losing kind of had the same effect where it hit a lot of the mojos of these players, especially the ones who got the double dip of getting punched in the jaw twice with the England final. You know, two bad managers mismanaging their clubs into penalties. But that being said, I think we just need to, like, this team needs to experience some winning because they haven't, except for, like, the players that have won elsewhere or have won in previous reigns, a la under Ferguson. You know, Rashford hasn't won like he should be winning at a club, Manchester United, given the status of his type of player, sir.
You know, we're losing that winning DNA year by year. Quick PSA for the podcast. If you like the American Red Devils and you want to support us, we don't have any commercial sponsors. We don't bother you with that nonsense. We would like you just to support us directly via Patreon. We just recorded our exclusive behind the scenes Patreon podcast. We do that every single month, recap each month for Manchester United, and including in the summer, we don't skip a beat there. If you want to support us, the best way to do so is via Patreon. Check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/AmericanRantDevils. We give away pins, stickers, scarves, shirts, you name it. There's four tiers. Sign up. Goes a long way. Be our true MVP of the pod and support us. Also, check out our website, www.AmericanRantDevils.com. Great fan-generated blog content. Alex is the editor-in-chief. We also have a great store. Click on store. We got hoodies, beanies, shirts, scarves, you name it. We got you covered there. Tell them about iTunes reviews.
iTunes reviews or writing a review anywhere you listen to the American Devils is a great way to support the pod. And we're still giving away free merch if you send a screenshot of your review to us. This is what you got to do. Write that 5-star review. It has cheeky banter, even better. We appreciate that. And send a screenshot to AmericanRedDevils@gmail.com with your mailing address. And I will personally pick, pack, and ship, sir. I'm going to send it to you straight to your door. Great way to support the pod. Absolutely free. This pod, sir, it's a passion project. Through COVID or whatever, my kids got COVID. We're all locked down in the house, not feeling well, but the pod never sleeps. We're going to muscle through it no matter what. And we got football on the agenda. So United States pick up a big win against bottom of the barrel Honduras, making it look tough. Going to go freeze them out. Tactical genius, Burke Heifer. But more importantly, Manchester United are back in action on Friday. That's what I really care about.
Look, sir, I think I speak on behalf of all American Red Devils. Wish you, your son, and your family a speedy recovery. I had a stomach bug. I'm on the saltine diet right now. I haven't eaten anything in like 2 days. I'm absolutely dying. But you know what? Pod doesn't sleep. We got that winning mentality here at the American Red Devils. You know us. We show up week in, week out. Remote or in person, sir. We have to do it this way. And these are the times. Since this is the international break pod, we're going to break down the Middlesbrough match first, get into United in the news, and then we'll get to the U.S. men's national team sort of recap of international break. We felt like we're a Manchester United podcast first. Let's deal with sort of the real meat and potatoes. Then we'll get to the U.S. men's national team. And if you're one of those Canadians that was talking smack to me, you don't have to listen to that part of the pod either. All right, sir, let's jump in. We got a next match. Cannot wait after watching the United States. It's been a rough go. Manchester United versus Middlesbrough at Old Trafford, sir. What a match. FA Cup fourth round. Friday night, lights. February 4th, 12 p.m. Pacific. What a game. What a kickoff, sir. I'm absolutely dying to watch Manchester United smoke Middlesbrough. Some insights into this match. Manchester United have not lost to Middlesbrough in their last 13 matches. And oh, by the way, the mighty Gareth Southgate used to manage Middlesbrough. That's where he comes from. Middlesbrough have been drawn with Manchester United for the 11th time in the FA Cup, more often than any other opponent. They've progressed from three of their other 10 ties, most recently in 2001-2002 during the run to the semifinals. Manchester United have won 28 of their last 31 home FA Cup matches against sides from a lower division, including each of their last 8 without conceding a goal. And Scott McTominay has scored 3 of Manchester United's last 7 FA Cup goals. Sir, pound that Scott McTominay to score line if you got it. All of which have come in 1-0 victories at Old Trafford. He did it versus Watford and West Ham. Like I mentioned, we've been smacking Watford around for a long time. We've won 64 games lifetime, drawn 28, lost 34. Coming to this game, Middlesbrough, they've been all over the place. They beat Blackpool. They beat Mansfield Town. They beat Reading. They lost to Blackburn Rovers. And then they beat Coventry, sir. So Middlesbrough, how you feeling?
Hey, they're sixth in the championship. It's a competitive championship this year. I think we know what to expect. You know, coming to Old Trafford for the FA Cup is going to be their year unless they make it to the playoffs. So it's a big game. The away fans, they're going to be up for it. We have to come out, I think, we came out against West Ham, minus the goal. You know, you have to just kind of take control from the jump. Kind of like we got with USA to get today against Honduras, a lower side. Getting that first goal early helps a lot. So I think if we can get an early goal against Middlesbrough, that will kind of help open up the dam a little bit. But a big game and a big run of fixtures because just, you know, it's not necessarily the opponents we're going to play over the next, you know, 3 weeks. It's just like this, we're playing a lot of matches. The pace of matches is, it's going to catch up to the side. So he's going to really have to rotate things.
So just looking at their stats in the championship, they scored 32. They've conceded 26. Their 26 goals conceded. That's actually third best in the championship, but their goals for is atrocious. They play it tight. If you want to think about Middlesbrough, they're going to defend very well. They're going to be organized. They could make it tough for Manchester United. We've seen, lower ranked opponents come to Old Trafford, defend well, hit us on the break. Seen this movie before. Little history about Middlesbrough. Obviously, they play in Middlesbrough in Yorkshire, England. They compete in the championship, which is the second tier of English football, like we mentioned, formed in 1876. They've been playing at the Riverside Stadium since 1995. They played at the Erison Park for 92 years between 1903 to 1995, but then they updated their stadium. Middlesbrough were one of the founding members of the Premier League in 1992 and became one of the first clubs to be relegated.
That's a great stat.
What a stat. What a stat. The club came close to folding in 1986 after experiencing severe financial difficulties before it was saved by a consortium led by a board member and then later chairman Steve Gibson. Big rivals are Sunderland, Newcastle, and Leeds United. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, sir. The club's achievements, including winning the League Cup in 2004, their first and only major trophy. They also reached the 2006 UEFA Cup final, losing to Spanish club Sevilla. So since 2006, Sevilla's on the up. Middlesbrough is on the down. They play the 3-5-2, sir. Don't know anyone on this team. I'm not even going to pretend like I do.
You don't rate Defray. Paddy McNair, I know that name. Former Manchester United player, sir. That's the same P. McNair.
I think there's only one.
I think there's only one, sir. It's a good match. Like you said, they are a decent side. They're defensively very sound. They play a lot of players in the midfield. They're going to congest the park. I feel like we talk about these type of teams all the time. It's not going to be any different, right? You know, they're going to sit back.
The goals for, goals against stat is huge. Think of how tight that is for them to be seventh.
No, they're a good team.
Let's focus on us, sir, because you can't worry about Middlesbrough at the end of the day. You got to be worried about Manchester United here. Injuries. List getting long here. Paul Pogba. He's been out for a while. Back in training, though, got a new haircut by African Cup of Nations. Wan-Bissaka, not available. Luke Shaw, thigh injury. Sancho. It's an other. Lindelof, obviously, it's an other with the robbery. And then we got Mason, which we will get to later, but he is no longer available for Manchester United, sir. Given that is the injuries and omissions, what is your lineup?
This is what I've got to get. De Gea in net. Deleau, Maguire, Varane, Telles is my back four. I'm going to do the McFred with the cheese, Bruno, Sancho, Rashford, Ronaldo, sir. Who you got?
I'm going to go with pretty much the same as you. De Gea, Deleau, Maguire, Varane, Telles, Fred, McTominay, midfield, Bruno, Elanga, Rashford, Ronaldo. I think Sancho has injury. Again, Rangnick's going to have the presser probably, Thursday? He'll probably give an update on everyone coming back from international break. So it's always hard to tell who has a knock while they're playing for their country. But I'm confident the lineup looks something like that. We're going to see if Maguire, Varane, We're going to see Fred McTominay midfield. Booking the bookies, the odds are heavily in favor of Manchester United, obviously playing at home against the championship side, plus 850 for Manchester United to win, plus 390 for the draw, and minus 360 for Middlesbrough to win. Sir, given those the odds, what is your score prediction?
You flipped it. 850 for Middlesbrough to win, minus 360 for United to win.
Flipped it.
I think it's going to be Manchester United 1, Middlesbrough 0. I think it's going to be a tight match. I think Scotty gets the winner after that stat from earlier. That is just too much of a stat. I think it's going to be a tight, tight match. They're going to make it tough for us. And we're not going to come in with terrific form because, you know, it's a little rickety at the moment. We're kind of piecing things together. So I think it's a tight match, but an important win and an important clean sheet heading into a busy run of fixtures. Sir, what you got?
Sir, Manchester United roll Middlesbrough 4-1 at home. Classic match. Spread the love around. Absolutely love to see this. Rashford gets up braced. We smoke him on to the next one. We're going to we ended international break, ended before international break with some momentum. We're going to pick up right where we left off. Rangnick just getting started.
Sir, I could use some momentum. You want to talk about some news?
Let's go. United in the news. Sir, I wish I had some positive news here. This is some unfortunate news. Shocking news. Mason Greenwood, he was released on bail today after arrest over a rape allegation. The images on social media came out were absolutely horrific. The club issued a statement swiftly. They don't condone violence in any way. And Mason Greenwood was essentially told he will not be involved with Manchester United until this is sorted. Obviously, I have no idea what the protocol is in the UK as far as how a case like this is investigated. But absolutely atrocious. Shocking, horrific images that were shared on social media. And Mason Greenwood, you know, it's going to be one. This is something where jail time is a real possibility, and you know, it's rightfully deserved if everything that came out is true.
I think I speak for most Manchester United fans. It's, you know, it's shock more than anything, given a player of his promise and age. And the and not just the allegations, but the photos and the audio clips to be as horrific as they were. You know, I'm glad United moved quickly, Nike as well. It's just, it's sad and horrible because it's a horrible thing that seemed to have happened for a player with so much promise. And, you know, selfishly, as just a Muppet Manchester United fan, just lose out as him of a player because it looks like he's not going to be available for at least the remainder of the season, which as a player that was coming more and more to his own is going to be a big loss to this team. But most importantly, you know, this is going to hang with him for forever. So horrible stuff, horrible. We condemn violence in every single form, and I just can't believe it. It's more of like, can't even believe it. Can't even believe this happened.
Yeah, and obviously your thoughts and prayers are with the victim and her family. And, you know, this is just one of those situations where it's just, like you said, shock is the best way to describe it. So I'll just read what the article says here. Manchester United player Mason Greenwood has been bailed following his arrest on suspicion of raping, assaulting, and threatening to kill a woman. Obviously, these are suspicions, but those are serious, I always call allegations. You can't take that with a grain of salt. Those are real. I think that's why you saw Manchester United move so quickly here. The striker is going to be suspended from playing or training with Manchester United until further notice. So I guess we're going to have to rely on some sort of court process in the UK, which I'm sure we'll get more information and we'll keep you posted about. But again, like you said, there's no place for violence like this at this club or anywhere in society. And Mason Greenwood is no longer involved with Manchester United.
He's not involved with United. Nike has moved to distance themselves. He's been cut from FIFA. You know, the reaction's been swift, and I think it's because everything is very ugly that's come out of it. And just, sorry, it's one of those things where we, you know, our whole pod, we like to conjecture about, like, what could be around this. And this is one of those things where you just can't because it's so, You know, it's horrible, sir. It's horrible, and it's still ongoing, and we don't even know all the details, and it's an open investigation, and just in the day, it's like, you know, you can't believe a player that you would be excited for even just watching a field. You know, it's just translates into something differently outside of that. It's, you know, it's hard to process as a fan because you have this image of them, and then something like this comes out, and it's like you can't even believe it. Like, it's like find out Santa Claus is not real as a kid. As I said on the Patreon pod, but it's an ugly day. It was an ugly day on Sunday night when that all came out.
And then so the sort of the Muppetry part of this goes to, okay, these allegations come out. They're allegations. The police are doing an investigation, and there's going to be results of that investigation. So, like, this podcast was going to focus on that. But obviously today it was reported in other by the Sports Mail, Rashford, Lingard, Fred, who were not following the star, decided to refollow him. So this might be a sign that they know something that we don't. But again, we're not going to speculate here because you have to wait until the police release the report and understand what he's going to be charged with or what exactly occurred. Because, like you said, you can't really speculate around this topic. It's too serious.
That's right. So I think we speak for all United fans. It's just, you know, it's horrible and we're shocked. And, you know, it's hard to speak about, John.
All right. Moving on to a less depressing topic here, but a depressing topic nonetheless.
Our transfer window.
Manchester United's January transfer window here. Players in. Nobody.
Looking. Still looking.
Nobody. That's good that the, you know, players in.
None.
Ghosty McGhosterson.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist. Players out. Tuan Zabi loan to Napoli. Oh, you know what we got for Tuan Zabi? Instead of bringing him in because we like need a center back because like Phil Jones is like literally playing for us now, we made $680,000 from Napoli. So that was totally worth it. Obviously, we saved the wages as well. Martial, 6-month loan, saving the wages. Diallo to Rangers, saving the wages. And Donny van de Beek, 6-month loan to Everton. Again, talked about this on the Patreon pod. We were offered midfielders for cheap. Romano reported that we were offered these players, right? Zakaria, et cetera, because they have 6 months left on the deal. We could have done something, got a midfielder in. We decided not to. It's like we're dying for midfielders. We're getting rid of them. We're getting rid of Donny. Getting rid of Martial. Oh, by the way, wasn't he involved in that goal against West Ham, sir?
He was. That was a strange one. Made more strange that you lost another player based on the news we just talked about. And that was, you know, I was also like double surprised that I thought they would at least on a panic buy after the Mason news, but they did nothing, sir. And like you said, we're weaker. Midfield is a real weakness. I think they're assuming Pogba is going to bail them out, but like, you think Pogba is going to stay healthy for the rest of the season? I would be shocked if he does. But that being said, we have fewer attacking options and fewer midfielder options than we did at the beginning of the window. Because there's a fifth out on this, like we talked about at the beginning of the story. So, not great. A lot of games, sir. And, you know, we don't have as much of a rotation bench that we can kind of reach into like we had a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and so when Romano released, like, hey, United were offered these players, and then, you know, Martial and Donny, they don't have a buy clause, right? He said that Manchester United are waiting for the next coach to then figure out this whole goddamn mess. Right. And then if you look at the 10,000 foot view of Manchester United, like you look at these contracts that we have coming up, you look at these older players on the books, how many people are that are going to leave in the summer, and then what this team needs. It's like Pogba's probably going to leave. Matic is over the hump. But by the way, we gave him a deal to 23. So it's like the amount of midfielders that we need in Manchester United, 2, 3. Oh, by the way, Jesse's going to leave. And oh, by the way, Jesse wanted to leave. Rangnick said he could leave. The board said he can't leave. This is just Woodward numptiness all over this window. This club can't get it sorted because when you look at what Manchester United needs right now, we're trying to fight for top four, and you have cheap, opportunistic buys that can be made in the transfer window, and we're just sitting on our hands. It makes no sense. Look at all the business we're going to do this window. We literally need to buy 7 players in the summer. And it's like, you need to be opportunistic, but nobody's running the club. Where's Murtaugh at? Where's the director of football at? There's no balance to the squad. Nobody's thinking about nothing. It's an absolute train wreck. Rangnick came into an absolute mess. And then now nobody trusts Rangnick to figure out to buy one midfielder, take a punt. Like, holy shit. It's like, this team needs to be sorted out now. They're just like kicking the can. They just always kick the can. Day late, dollar short. We need a center back. We'll take a year. We need to sign Sancho. Take another year. Everything. We just waste so much goddamn time. And this squad, the contract cliffs, nothing makes sense about this team. It's a shambles. Like, we got good players, but if you sign Ronaldo, that's a win now player. You got to support him. You got to try to build this squad. We got nothing.
So the idea that they do not trust Ralph Rangnick to pick a £6 million or €6 million midfielder, he's going to be coming in as a consultant, maybe even like who should be the director of football. Like, he knows who has got it, who doesn't. He signed unbelievable players at his former clubs. Unbelievable players. Like, he's got an eye for talent. Wouldn't you trust him? If he doesn't rate Jacaria, okay. The next guy, whoever, the other guy from Marseille, who was also offered £6 million, £5 million, whatever it was. But the whole point is, like, if they're going to sort it with the next manager, they're the excuse factory. They're the original excuse factory, which is like, we're not doing anything right now because we're confident in this squad's ability to get into fourth place. That's basically what they did. If they weren't confident, they probably would have signed one of those midfielders. But right now, they're not worried about next year. They're not worried about long-term planning because they never have been, ever, ever. Not one decision really takes into effect long-term planning under the Glazers. So they're just like, well, right now, you know, why pay money when we're in fourth place? Look at the league table. It says fourth.
Yeah, but it's about the balance in this team. It's like, why did you give Matic the deal? Why do you extend Mata? Why do you extend Jones? Why aren't you getting rid of Jesse Lingard? Like, you need to be getting... I'd rather you get rid of Jesse Lingard and play Tony Martial. You know what I'm saying? Like, Tony Martial's a good player. We could play Rashford on the right, him on the left. Mason's not here anymore, right? There's legit things that we could do with him. All right, player's head isn't in it. Okay, I understand. Fine. Let him go to Sevilla. He really doesn't want to play for us. I get it. But Donny van de Beek, it's like, you look at those fixtures in February, he would play for us.
He would.
And we're literally trying to save money getting wages off the books. We're a thin team. Look at those injuries. Lindelof, I mean, dude, it's with the situation this team is in, the depth and balance across the roster is a huge problem. And if you look at the other side of Manchester with Man City, it's like, come on, man. Like, our starting right back is Wan-Bissaka and Dalot. And that's almost like by accident that we have two. It's like, you think that they would run their team like that? Obviously, they don't have a number nine, but they don't need it. Actually, they did just sign a number nine, the number nine that we were linked to. But there's just no depth across the roster. There's no balance. Like, the midfield's been hurting for 3 years. Like, how long can your midfield be hurting before you fix it? How long can the center back situation be, you know, hurting till you fix it? And the problem with this team is we wait so long to fix these problems that other problems pop up. Like, a world-class football roster, it needs to be built like with significant depth, because over time so many things change that this team, it can't handle it. Like, you sign Varane, you think that's the solution. Okay, he's injured all the time. But you look at his injury record before you bought him. So you actually needed to buy two center backs if that's the direction you're going to go, right?
But think about who you loaned out. Look at the ages of these players. 26, Martial, Dalot's 19, and Van de Beek's 24. And at the same time, you're stuck with players that are running out of contract or older or whatever in the Lingards, Matic's, Mata, Pogba. He's back, but he gets injured all the time, right? Like, it's just kind of crazy. But it speaks to, there's no long-term planning. There's no director of football. Murtaugh, he wasn't saving shit. He's a yes man too. Brought in by David Moyes, who never was director of football. Richard Arnold's the same, sir. Listen, have you met the Glazers? Like, we know who we're talking about.
But my point is, there's no plan. Like, if you look at this January, so if you want to look at a world class footballing institution, there has to be a plan, and there is no plan. There was no plan. Diallo got injured before he got loaned, so he couldn't loan him. So we had him hang around. Then we loaned him for 6 months. It's about saving money. Martial, like, apparently wanted to go. We won't sell him. Like, the whole idea is, if Martial didn't want to be here, we should have sold him 2 years ago, right? Tuan Zebe should not be on loan. He should be at Manchester United right now. Eric Bailly or Phil Jones shouldn't be on the roster. Donny van de Beek should play, or we should have sold him last summer. There's a sense of urgency to sort of managing this roster. You can't let people hang around, like Jesse Lingard, letting him hang around. And Rangnick approving that he can go, and then the board saying no is literally just trying to posture. They're just trying to posture to people saying, hey, if you're going to run your deal down, we're going to put you on the bench, and you're going to suffer for it.
Like I said,
you will do what we say. And that is an Ed Woodward mentality, which is like, I'd rather pull one over on Jesse Lingard for 6 months to screw him over than to try to focus on building a winning roster that can compete for trophies. And that's the problem with Manchester United. They're not, there's no plan. They have, like, and Rangnick's the guy who should be telling us who to buy, who's going to be the director of football. And like we said they fucked that up.
We
too.
Said they fuck it up, dude. And it's been 2 months and they're already fucking it up because they're like, oh, we're not going to listen to him about who to hire as a, you know, who to.
It's fill an excuse not to spend money.
It's an
dude.
Excuse not to spend money, bro. Exactly right. Because they're not ambitious.
Don't buy their bullshit, bro. And
no,
here's
they're
the
liar.
Number thing.
All they do is lie.
The number one thing, we cover the January window. It sucks. There you go. But we said they would. Sir, we've seen this movie before. We said they were signing nobody. Don't get it twisted. They're signing nobody. They didn't sign anyone. They didn't even make an attempt at signing anyone. And look at everyone tweeting all this stuff like, oh, we're going to sign this and that. It's like, no, we're not. The board's not focused about that. Ed Woodward's gone. That's the win. And you know what kind of makes me happy is we got an Ed Woodward window and Ed Woodward left. And that's his stamp on his club. That's exactly what Manchester United's all about. An opportunistic loan players to save money, have no vision, have no direction. Where literally they could care less about Rangnick running this team. They're like, whatever. They've written it off. They've written this club off. And to think that after you get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that the rebuild doesn't start the next day is insane. Sir Alex Ferguson would win the title and he'd be in his office the next day planning to win the league again. There are no days off in this business. And we are literally punting until we find hire Pochettino to solve all of our problems.
It's gonna be a long. It's gonna be a long barren spell, my man. I said, like we talked about this when it doesn't matter if they bring in the smartest footballing minds if they don't listen to him, or you have like idiots around him to implement his change, or you're just not gonna do anything anyway because that would mean spending money. So nothing's changing. We say the same thing. Oh, it's the same shit. It's
yeah, like, but you could have different plans, right? You don't need to be like the plan of we need to go buy, like, for example, we have to go buy Jadon Sancho for however million. Like, I don't need Manchester United to have that be the plan. I could be like, hey, we're going to be committed to our academy. Like, we got Chong. We have Hannibal. We have a bunch of players coming up, and we actually want to integrate them in the team. Like, you could have a plan, but the whole point is you have to have a plan, and you have to know what positions you have a deficit in, and you can't just be playing Fred McTominay for 2 fucking years, bro. It's like you need to be sorting it out. Like, we're not solving any of our problems. It's like there's no balance to this team, and that's like step one. Then step two is like, all right, maybe since this team is good and we have a nice balance, quality players who show up, then we can get in a Sancho and put it in. How does that work? You know what I'm saying? That was like how Manchester United used to operate. Like once you get the midfield sorted, you get the defense sorted, then you can kind of bring in some players to kind of make this team better. But the whole thing is, like you said, our philosophy will be we need 3 midfielders, but we'll go buy Declan Rice for $80 million and not buy any others. And that doesn't leave you in a good spot.
But that's how this club does business. They think about names, English names, players that will, you know, generate a lot of tweets. Or we're going to suffer for a long time. Glazers out. Get a green and gold scarf. They're the worst owners in England, arguably, now that Newcastle has been sold.
Because people who try to win the league, here's the thing. Manchester United think they can just sit back and just get away with it, like sign some big names and don't need to actually figure anything out. And just coast, right? That's kind of how this club has been going for the last decade, just like coasting off of the brand that was built by Sir Alex Ferguson, obviously Sir Matt, a lot of different people, but you know what I mean? Like sort of they came in and they kind of just monetized all of that and they haven't really done shit. And it's so hard to win in this business, look at all the money that all these top clubs are putting into it, and they're trying to win. Manchester United ain't trying to win. And if you're not trying, you are never going to win. And that's where we're at. We're not trying to win. We're trying to, like, sell jerseys. We're trying to, like, make revenue. We're trying to make top four because that's the making money, and we're not trying to win. Trying to win requires, like, investment in a lot of things that Manchester United is not doing at the moment.
I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not going to argue with that, sir. We have no ambition. And we have, it's not even just like ambition. It's just, we haven't spent money well. The club, we're not winning a single fucking thing of merit while Avram or Joel Glazer, whoever owns us, sir. They're like, you've seen it. It's hard to win the league, and it's hard to win the league when you run well. And when you run like very poorly, objectively poorly, then fourth place is a fucking achievement. So we should, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting fourth place.
How long till Wayne Rooney is the manager of Manchester United?
So that'd be a good outcome.
It's inevitable, right?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You could bring in fucking Fergie back and he can win with this ownership.
Okay. Group. How many managers before we win the league?
10. It's going to be like 20. It's going to be done in 20 years. I mean it. Because they're not going to sell. Because like, they're
going to sell.
They're lazy too. They're not ambitious, right? They're just like, it's cashing in. It's only gonna
going to. No, because they're old. Because the dynamics is that you don't understand.
They're not that old.
They are. I mean, they're in their mid to late 60s. And this is
that
like,
old?
This is like a trust fund. Yeah, no, this is, they need to cash. They're going to cash this asset out within the next 5 years. The question is who's going to buy it. It's not if they're going to sell it. It's who's going to buy it. That's really the problem. Obviously, I would hope that somehow, some way, fans across the world could all chip in and we could all own it and in some way. Or we could have a billion Patreon subscribers and we could buy it. And then, sir, we would probably screw it up in our own way. But it'd be fun. You know, I'm not saying I figured it out, but I'm saying we'd have fun trying.
I know if you gave us the spend that they've spent over the last 8 years, we could do a better job than they have, like, without a doubt.
You could do a better job than Woodward because you'd listen to people and learn from your mistakes, and he is not one to do that.
I hire people who know what the fuck they're doing because I would know my own deficiencies. And that is like, that is number one reason why he's failed is because he thinks he can do these things that he's not equipped to do. So he spent money poorly when he could have just like hired someone smart and let him make those decisions. But he's an ego. He likes the name. That's why, like, I remember like yesterday, like the amount of news that leaked about how smart he was and how much of a marketing guru he was, and he took this club to the next level in terms of monetizing different things. It's like he just whored out the brand of fucking noodle companies in Southeast Asia or tire companies. He's acting like he was such a genius. And now it's come to roost, right? Because he didn't have a great manager and actually a great CEO, and Alex Gill, that also retired with Fergie, which is probably like, yeah.
David Gill.
That's correct. So, sir, you know, when football men don't run the club, you're gonna suffer.
We could go all day, sir. I think that's a wrap on the United and the news. Boy, ups and downs all around. Hey, let's hope we can make a sustained run for it. We're gonna jump into our U.S. Men's National Team World Cup qualifying recap. I'm sure the Canadian fans are gonna stick around just to hear us talk about that match. It started off on Thursday, sir. We won 1-0 versus El Salvador. A pretty poor performance. We're playing at home against El Salvador, and we didn't look up for it. Slow, side to side. You know, a lot of parallels with Manchester United. A lot of great players on that pitch, but not getting in behind. We didn't have the sense of urgency to sort of break down side, compact, intent to defend.
I mean, comparing it to Canada, right? It's like Canada's a better team, of course, but we managed the game. You know, they didn't have a single shot on target. We're just slow at times, this team, right? They did not a lot of penetration, very similar to the Manchester United side that we've talked about, but they got the result. They got the clean sheet. El Salvador didn't threaten at all in this game. I mean, United States bossed it.
They had one good opportunity, but, you know, look, 3 points is 3 points. We'll take it, but that's not a good result for this team. Like, the whole point of this is, like, it's not about, like, skipping a result against El Salvador. It's about, like playing well as a team and being like, oh, wow, we're going to do things in the World Cup. Qualification should be, like, a foregone conclusion, and this should be, like, us getting better for the World Cup, right? Our second match, we go against Canada. We said that we would blow them out on the pod.
I called a draw.
Mike, our expert, me, we said that we would beat them. Lo and behold, Canada beat us. Look, we had a lot of the possession, but we didn't create many chances. Three shots on target to the U.S. compared to four for Canada. The ref was an absolute numpty. Like, the physicality was insane. He was just letting so many fouls go uncalled. But again, like, this is a... with these players on this team, you got to be beating Canada. Again, buildup's too slow. I thought a bunch of players played who shouldn't have. And then the comments after the match by Burkheffer. Oh, we dominated the game. It's like, give me a break, dude. It's Canada away. It's like, it should be a... honestly, this team reminds me too much of Manchester United. That's the real heartbreak of the U.S. men's national team. Is I would like to have a break of just watching a team that's really talented underperform consistently. And that is what I watched in these first two matches.
I mean, the parallel is... it's similar for a lot of ways, mainly because of front office, right? It's like, if you think about the men that are running Manchester United, they are not that dissimilar from the men running U.S. soccer. It's like former investment bankers that have been put in there for one specific reason. It's like, sir, we are both former investment bankers. And not to say, like, we couldn't do an okay job at running USA soccer, but, like, we're not, you know, we weren't football players. We weren't football coaches. We weren't football administrators at football clubs in Europe. It's like, you should have people that know what the fuck they're doing. And what you have at USA Soccer is you have people that run from the top down who don't know what they're doing. And Burkheffer doesn't know what he's doing, bro. Because Burkheffer is literally the brother of the former COO of fucking US Soccer. And if you want to talk about, like, why you should not make your manager the brother of a former executive... you should have to be explained to that. But the deficiencies you saw were, like, mostly clear in the Canada game. So the Zardes start and the Zardes keeping him into, like, the 70th minute, that's inexcusable. Because, you know, the players that you have at your disposal and the way this team lines up, Canada's a good team. But it was never more damning than in this Canada match. Because it's just like, you could just tell that the same way that we could tell, because we know better than most, because we have seen this at Manchester United very recently, that the squad has gotten way too good for this shitty manager, is that, like, this USA soccer team is the best team it's been ever, and their manager is not nearly good enough, and you could tell in this Canada game, because it should have been a tight match, but, like, we got blown out because I think the manager got, like, gazumped.
No, and that's exactly what you're seeing. You're seeing a horrible, horrible coach. Like, and not, like, fine.
Oh, he's,
like,
bad.
His CV is bad. It's like losing record in Sweden. Got fired in like a year and a half. Then he was Columbus Crew, losing record.
Sub 40%, bro.
Sub 40% across the board, like, not qualified. And they hired him, like you said, his brother, former CEO of U.S. soccer. And, oh, by the way, since Berhalter was appointed to the U.S. men's national team as the head coach due to the nepotism inside of U.S. soccer, which is weird. I don't know why it exists. Jay Berhalter is now a consultant on special projects to the MLS. And this is where it gets interesting, is because U.S. soccer and MLS have this weird, obviously they're economically tied together, where even if you look at the Honduras match, which we won 3-0 today, the amount of MLS players that come in a game like this is kind of suspect, because Pulisic was benched for no reason. Like, all these MLS players come in, and it's honestly because, like, the MLS is a business and they want their big stars out there playing for the United States men's national team. And that's kind of the conflict of interest, where, like, the better players play in Europe, but the U.S. men's national team is used as a vehicle to promote this business that is, has a vested interest. And Berhalter's a yes man. So again, this is like the U.S. men's national team. They like yes men. Like, Bruce Arenas was a yes man. Burkheffer is a yes man. Klinsmann wasn't. Klinsmann was like Mourinho. He shook the boat. He told them that soccer in the United States sucked. He told them they didn't know what they were doing. Oh, by the way, the guy's won a World Cup. He knows what he's doing. Coached Germany to a World Cup semifinal. And he told all the players, like, don't play in this league. It's shit. You need to go to Europe. By the way, he was right. All the players are doing that. Yeah. And then now we have a shit coach. So it's like, again, it's the same thing. The mismatch where it's like, also, the stuff he does on the touchline, he's taking selfies with people in the crowd in the 80th minute of the match today.
He did that?
Yeah. In the 80th minute of the match, he's literally in the crowd and somebody's taking selfies with him. In the 81st minute of a match, he's doing behind the back back passes on the touchline. He's giving fist bumps to like players before they give a throw in the 20th minute, like 20 yards
when they were losing.
20 yards out of the touchline, they're losing, and he's like giving his player a fist bump before a throw in. This guy's a maniac.
Sorry, act like you've been there before. He has no idea what he's doing because he's never coached at a high level. I mean,
who fucking hired this guy?
His brother, bro. Like, literally his brother. Like, he's
McKinney's getting a fist bump from this random dude.
20th minute, bro. McKinney, that was like, what are you doing,
dude? Juventus.
He plays for Juventus.
He plays for Juventus. You think Allegri fucks around like that? It's like, no, dude. He takes himself seriously. This is a serious job, and you got to get serious results. Berhalter looks like the players are really good, and they're dealing with this dude. That's what it looks like. Yep. The players are really good, and they're dealing with this dude, and the lineups aren't right because he don't know what he's doing. And no, I would say of these three games, he didn't get one lineup right. And also, his selection's wrong because Josh Sargent and John Brooks aren't playing. They're two great players. I'm worried. This team is not playing well. We're going to qualify for the World Cup. Great for us, but our team is so much better than that. We should be smoking this whole... was it like octagonal? We should be going to Qatar with momentum, and we're just going to squeak in. We haven't played one game well, honestly. Like, fine, Honduras, we played, you can say we played well, but they're the worst in the group.
Yeah, come on, dude.
We're going to go to the World Cup. Like, we're getting bossed by Canada. Canada's not good. I hate to say it. This could be a knock it out of the group situation. It's because of the manager. He won't get fired. I like the team, hate the coach.
The more I see this team play, the more I'm invested in the U.S. soccer and like it. Really do. The team is full of promise, but it's almost like sounds cheap to keep making this comparison, but it's very similar. I mean, the bar is quite low, you know, like they're not trying to have the best footballing nation possible. Obviously, look at the people running it. Look at the manager. I think World Cup qualifying, getting to the World Cup, that's enough. And I think that's enough to keep Berhalter around for a while. Like, I think if, as long as they keep going to World Cups, that will be enough. But I just think that chasm between the players and the manager will only become wider. Because I think actually these players are getting better and better, and the manager is not getting any better, dude. He's going for runs before 2 hours before a game like an idiot. He has no idea what he's doing.
And he's like in Nashville before Canada drew us. He went on a run 2 hours before the game in the most populated area in Nashville, wearing all his USA soccer stuff, so everyone would see him. It's like the weirdest thing. Like, he's got some fucking issues, dude. And he's like not good at his job. Nope. And the problem is he's like tied in with his brother in US Soccer Federation, that it's like these type of weirdos are around, and you don't know, like, why did this guy get the job? Does he have a good CV? Like, it's not like he's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and like won fucking titles for Manchester United. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing about this dude. Nothing. Wasn't a good player. Wasn't a good coach. His brother is just around powerful people. And what did they want, sir? They wanted a yes man. And guess what? Yes men don't win nothing, because that attitude ain't going far in that locker room. And we haven't even gotten into the point that we're playing in like 1 degree weather in Minnesota, when we're like, you could play in Florida or California.
Another half
at
decision,
60
by the
degrees,
way.
And that's his decision. Somebody said it's like United States, big country, small soccer mentality.
Right.
Small soccer. We have the mentality of Honduras, and we should have the mentality of France.
You're trying to freeze out the lowest team in the fucking group. Like, you have to play them in Minnesota in the fucking winter because, like, you want to make it tough for them to come up from Central America where it's tropical and it's warm. You shouldn't have to do that to the lowest team in the group, let alone anyone in the group, because, like you said, you should have the ambition of a club that wants to be competing for the highest titles in National League or Nation League competitions, which is like compete at the World Cup, to go there and to be, not just go there, but like get out of your group and do something. And this club, this team ain't doing anything under the Hef, sir.
Yeah, but we should stop being afraid. And that's what I don't understand. It's like we play afraid. We play these matches in like Columbus and Minnesota. They should be at like, dude, they should be in the Meadowlands in New Jersey, sir, with like 80,000. We should be playing these in like, Coliseum in LA. Like, we should be playing these in the best stadiums that the United States has to offer, dude. It doesn't matter who shows up, if it's half or half, or maybe even if there's more Hondurans there. I don't care. They should be played on the best fields and the best facilities we got with the best weather because we have the better team, and on the day we'll win. And by the way, when you win in America, people show the fuck up, by the way. You don't go play in Columbus like you're scared some Hondurans are going to come to the game. You play and you win, and people will start wearing the jersey and start cheering you on, even if they're from Honduras, sir. That's how it goes, dude. It's like people want to see winners in this country, and we've been playing scared. It's that Berhalter scared mentality, dude. And by the way, no one's got World Cup experience on this team when we go there. I think this is like Klinsmann got us out of the group of death. That team fought and died for every blade of grass on that field. So we saw it when we played Ghana. I mean, it's amazing what this team meant to me and how awesome that experience was. And I just don't see it. Even though we're going to go to Qatar, I don't feel that fight like that. I knew the other teams were better, but we were going to fight to the death to win. And I was like proud to wear the shirt, proud to root for that team. And it was a great feeling. And I don't know if I'm going to feel that watching this numpty on the sideline with this crew.
John, you don't like those back heel, like the bounce pass. I guess he played basketball probably more so than soccer.
But you know what I'm saying? Like that feeling of grit, like fight, like we had it, dude. Like that team was just, we weren't the best, but we like, everyone played like it's same like Manchester United. Like we didn't have the best players, but man, we showed up and like made an imprint on a game. And it's like, we have really good players. We kind of can't play against Canada. Like, I don't get it.
I get it. You hired a bad MLS manager. And there's no, like, we don't even have to, like, rag on MLS. If you had a 55% winning rate at Columbus Crew and won silverware in the United States in the MLS, dude, there's no shame in that. But, like, the United States of America, with the quality of players we have now and the clubs that our players are playing at, should not have... They should have an ambitious manager. It should be a step up. We should have a European manager or a manager that's managing Europe or manage a European national team or like a big team in South America, not like an average because he's American, because he's connected to the C-suite, if you will. He's pushed the front of the line. So that should have been like, what the fuck are we doing? Wikipedia exists. You can look at his stats. There should have been a public outcry like when he was appointed. Really looking back at it, it's like how did that go down at all? Like how is he allowed to be appointed at 38% win rate, brother of the COO, bro? How is someone like, yo, we can't do that,
sir? It's unbelievable. He won the MLS Cup as a player for the LA Galaxy in 2011. So he
cares. Yes, in 11, bro.
He won the Western Conference Championship. As well in 2009. So
as a player in the MLS.
I know his coaching win rate at Hammarby in Sweden was 39%. Columbus Crew was 38%. 193 games at the Columbus Crew.
193 plus, games.
Plus five goal differential. 193 games.
Yeah. Plus. It sounds about right. And you look at him now.
Shipped 282 goals with the Columbus Crew. Oh, by the way, Jesse Zardes keeps playing. Same thing. He favors these MLS players.
Dude, Morris, like the fact that Morris started today, like Meepie Morris, he looked awful. How is he playing?
He's played only two matches in the last 2 years. Jordan Morris has been injured.
He looked like it. He looked like he was Sargent's like completely out of shape.
Sargent's playing for Norwich and looks absolutely lights out. Sir, the thing about Berhalter, the thing we should be ashamed the most, you know where he's born?
Jersey.
Inglewood, New Jersey, sir. We're hating on our own kind.
It burns the most. It burns the most because of that.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I'm looking at his career. He played for Crystal Palace 19 games.
19.
He scored a goal.
Sorry, he's a bad player.
I don't know if they were in the championship, though. I'd have to look that up.
Probably weren't. He also played in the MLS when it was like...
He played Crystal Palace 2001-2002.
What a player. What a career he had.
I mean, sir, I have a little more respect for him now. He played for Crystal Palace for 20 games. That's not bad.
The five goal differential is my favorite part.
The question is where they were. Okay, I think they were in the first division. They didn't play in the Premier League. That's good. And they were awful. God awful. Yes. So you know what? There you go. Sir, we're kind of getting off topic here. Let's get into the table here for what this means for the United States men's national team. We could have a separate podcast for the Burke Heifer rants. Standings live here. Canada, 25 points. They are beating El Salvador 2-0. Making easy work of that one that we could not. They've won their last five, Canada. They're looking strong. United States, of our last five, 1-3, lost one, drawn one. So we have 21 points with 11 played. Mexico, 19. Panama, 18. That's the cutoff. Panama is that playoff spot. Then you have Costa Rica with 16, El Salvador with 9, Jamaica with 7, Honduras with 3. So it's tight at the top there, sir. It's one of those things where that Canada match really would have put some daylight, really would have let us try to challenge for winning the group. I think Canada will probably run away with it. We have Costa Rica and Mexico away coming up in the last round of qualifying. So three more games. It's going to be really tight for the United States men's national team because Panama is also in that group too. And they're top four with us. So not an easy... You can't fool Mexico away playing at the Azteca, Panama at home, and then Costa Rica away. That's going to be really hard matches. And we could be in the playoff spot, realistically. It's not out of the realm of possibility here. I think we have it. We're 3 points from above Panama, but a lot can happen in those last three matches. So that's going to be really exciting to watch that. I just think we got to be playing better. I think my eyes don't lie. We have not played well for the team that we have. Burke Heifer has, yes, he's gotten results, but we have not played well. We are playing below expectations right now. So I am not completely convinced that we are not going to have to go to a playoff to get into this World Cup.
No, it could go bad. You're playing number three, number four, number five. And they're all within, you know, 5 points, 4 points, more or less. So two of which are on the road, two of which are in hostile environments. You know, Costa Rica is also a tough venue to play. We have not had good results in Costa Rica, in San Jose. So, hey, it's on the Hef, and Hef we trust. But there's a lot of good players that look better every game week, and I think they're being let down by their managers. So, big test for him. He has to qualify, but it can all just like blow up in our face. You know, lose to Panama, shit gets real quick.
Yeah, but sir, bar is in qualification. Like,
yes, it is.
We got to be going far in a World Cup. I mean, like, this is the most talented team we've like ever had. You know, like Landon Donovan would go like on loan at Everton for like half a season. You know, like. Clint Dempsey obviously was like our breakout star, but like we have legitimate world-class talent. Dest, Reyna, McKinney, Pulisic. Like we have legit talent, like a backbone of like world-class talent, dude, playing for world-class clubs in Europe. And it's like we should be the best we've ever been. And like I'm not seeing it on the field. And that's very concerning. I'm seeing like a team that's worse than what we saw in 14 going to Brazil. And we had like pieced that team together, honestly, by people like converting to U.S. men's national team who were born in Germany and like could qualify. You know, like we had to really pull some strings to get some players. But man, like we should be on the up. And I think the coaching is, you know, the problem with U.S. soccer, we're going to qualify. Everyone's going to celebrate, tell him what a great job he did. And then we'll go to the World Cup and we'll get slapped in the face.
And then
it's going to be like embarrassing. Wait till we see the group we get.
I'll tell you what, I usually don't listen to like, who was it on today? Fox Soccer? Who had the game? FS1 or was it CBS Sports?
I was on Univision.
Yeah, smart man.
So much better.
Oh my God, because so Lawless and that whole crew like talking up Burke Heifer as like this great manager that's like done an amazing job. And just like, dude, they all just sew the party line. I mean, like, because they're big MLS guys, right? They can only really play in MLS, so... It's very similar to Manchester United, run by former bankers. These were Goldman versus PwC with Edward. But hey, big three games. Those are big opponents. So it should be interesting.
Hey, we're going to Qatar regardless. I think the U.S. will qualify, but I just think, you know, it's like when you saw United play and you're like, we're getting these results, but eventually it's going to blow up in our face. And when you play someone real And by the way, if Canada's the barometer, like, holy shit, we're fucked. It's like, holy shit.
What's
like
Germany going to do to us?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like the old team we had just had more fight. Like, look at what we did against Belgium. It was a dog fight. It wasn't pretty. We didn't have the better players, but we like fought. And it's like, this team, I think, will play a team like that when they'll lower their heads. You know, just, that's the type of attitude we got. It could be the new generation of players because there are parallels with Manchester United. But man, I'm hoping for the best. I need us to pick up. So if we just need to go on a run, have three good games, like beat Mexico away. Like, we need some big results for United States and carry that on to the World Cup. So, sir, we'll see. Burkheffer. Hey, I'll tell you what, he's entertaining. He's a nut.
I mean, he's not a good kind of entertaining.
It's a cringe, like cringe.com, dude. Like, it's unbelievable. All right, sir, that's it. That's the podcast. We are the American Red Devils. We are for fans, by fans. If you like the podcast, please check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/AmericanRedDevils. Also visit our website, www.AmericanRedDevils.com. Check out our blog. We have a store. Click on that. Pick up some merchandise. Everything you buy supports the small-time operation. Write a review on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you listen to pods. It goes a long way for us to get found. We're just two guys and a dog in a podcast bunker. And now we're doing a remote, sir. We're wishing you the best. Hopefully your son feels better. Hopefully you feel better. But Pod Never Sleeps. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk some smack about Burkheffer.
I mean, that was probably the highlight. The pod. It was just like talking shit about the Hef. So I'm enjoying that. And appreciate all the American Red Devils listening in week out. Couldn't do without you guys. Pod Never Sleeps.
How many Crystal Palace Burkheffer jerseys were purchased back in 2001?
Two.
Zero.
One for him. Yeah. You can look that up. Yeah. Is that even available? I figure like he bought himself one. He bought himself two, probably.
Yeah, there you go. I'll tell you. Well, you know what, sir? You got some music? Or you have the top downloads?
I got top Ready downloads to go? And Let's I go. Got music. Come on.
Let's go. Let's finish this pot up.
All right, top cities last 7 days. Appreciate all of you. Number one, how you doing? How you doing? Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Brookshire, Texas. Plano, Texas. Oslo, Norway. Pontevedra, Florida. Frederick, Maryland. Buffalo, New York. Ormond Beach, Florida. Floral Park, New York. And last but not least, Jacksonville, Florida. We also have Bangkok, Thailand on the list. Appreciate all the American Devils listening week in, week out. United is back on Friday, Middlesbrough. Sir, we got an oldie but a goodie on the song list.
What do we got?
UNITED. United are the team for me, sir. Oldie but a
Let's
good one.
Let's go.
Enjoy the week and enjoy the game on Friday. Let's go.